I'm not on my back.
What is that?
Okay, I'm Paul Allerband. I've been around the internet since, well, a long time. I wrote my first piece of software, first program in 1968, first ran in 1969, first came across the probably the internet in 1972, 74, that time frame. I've done three startups, two of my own, one with someone else. My wife has a startup of her own. They're all internet related. My background of education, I went to UCLA, UC Berkeley, in various subjects. I kept switching around, rather eclectic. And one evening in Los Angeles, I got pulled aside by the LA sheriff and searched, and I decided, well, I need to know, understand this, so I decided to go to law school. So I went to Loyola Marymount, graduated, and never bothered to practice. Been techie ever since.
Have you been searched?
No. But that's been very useful, isn't it? I consider myself a techie rather than an attorney. My knowledge is primarily technology, and I can go pretty deep on this. I'm going to try to do a presentation, a modification of a presentation I did at UNH just the other day, which is mostly technical. And after some Diane's comments and some of the feedback I had there, I decided to completely revise it. So, this is a new presentation. Okay, there's three parts to this, actually four. I'm not going to tell you the last part. Part one is why multimedia networking is important to you, not just as users, but as legal people. I'm going to talk about sort of what is multimedia, what is multimedia networking. The third part, which we may have cut short, is digging into technology. And I'll leave the slides here if they want to use them. Now, your job is to ask questions as they occur. I don't like sitting here and watching the number of blank faces. I'd rather have it interactive. So as soon as something strikes you, you don't understand something, you know, say something. Don't leave me hanging. Let me know when I'm saying something you understand. Let me know when I'm leaving totally off.
Yeah, why don't we interrupt?
Go ahead. I mean, it'll be back. Okay, let's move on. So why is it important? We all know it's going to network carry all kinds of things nowadays. It's going to start carrying even more multimedia assets. Now, multimedia...
Could multimedia assets be something like an architectural firm might be involved in, perhaps into a construction firm?
Now, that to me strikes more as passive drawing. So what I think is multimedia, I do mention it later, is something which speaks not to the intellectual mind, but more to the senses, the eyes, the ears, smell, touch, taste, what have you. That to me means more of moving pictures, of series of sounds, whether it be voice or music.
Audio video.
Yeah, and possibly once we get a further thing, your tactile senses as well. Might have a plug in the back of our heads, yeah.
Why do you call it assets instead of tools or mechanisms or something else? What is the asset part
of it? Oh, multimedia content, using the content, tends to have, we'll talk about content, a very high value, either in the mind of the creator or actually in some sort of marketplace. Like, what's the line here? You know, what was Matisse painting worth 100 years ago?
So intellectual property.
Yes.
Okay.
I find the content sources can bloom even more than they have on the web, because to date, people building multimedia content, the things we think of as entertainment or art, have been somewhat constrained by artificial constraints. Like, there's just not that much. It's hard to become a broadcaster on the airwaves. You just can't get into that space. Not your private radio station. And the other thing is, audio, video, multimedia is going to carry content just as the right thing to say, can I carry across boundaries of cultural boundaries? But we're talking about content which speaks to the emotion, the eye, the ear. And thus will have a much stronger cross-cultural effect than does written text. Because written text needs emolite filters it, but when you're speaking to the emotion, you're triggering even more cultural sorts of resentment or possible resentment. That's what, just a couple of quick thoughts of what it might have to do in law is intellectual property might have to be tweaked or rethought in some way because we're changing the relationship between the creator and the consumer.
This is the only slide.
And finally, you know, secondly, we may find the FCC becomes obsolete. How long does business wait? Not very. It needs answers today or yesterday. One of the reasons I'm here is I am building a multimedia product at Cisco. And I know these products are not going to be usable unless we have the appropriate legal structure around them so the content providers feel safe and put in literally their crown jewels. How much is the next Star Wars movie worth to Lucasfilm right now? A lot. They're not going to risk it. Unless I can actually make sure that the entire structure, you know, technical, legal, everything else. And if I don't put that in there, groups will oppose it, just like they're doing the same thing period. Okay, multimedia is moving really fast. And as a techie, we're not very communicative to the visual community. In fact, most of us don't care. So it's going to be important for you to keep up. And I don't know why that's the last slide. Last time I had some problems, so I'm going to jump back into my presentation. No, you're not going to see all of that. Okay, I'm keeping this slide. You're going to have to work real hard to keep up. Well, that's why I'm here.
Define fast. What kind of time frame are you talking about? We weren't talking about with those technologies.
3 years ago, 2 years ago, there wasn't a radio station on the internet. There's lots of them now. I've heard movie companies talk about distributing actual real live entertainment grade stuff over the net. Broadcast.com didn't exist 2 years ago for the purpose of distributing high quality content on the net. They're now, what, $5 billion company? This stuff can happen really, really fast. The actual physical technical underpinning, the actual hardware is in place. DSL is there, it's under the street. It's really just a regulatory administrative reason why people haven't turned it on at a full 6 megabit or roughly bandwidth. Everybody.
There's a reason why you care about having systems that aren't just cool, but responsive to the needs of people that produce things like The Lion King and the next Star Wars. Wearing your Cisco hat, the reason why you care about that is because no matter how nifty your system, it won't be used to move that content, and therefore people serving it or offering content won't buy it, and therefore you won't make money unless you embed protections in their they are your customers. Is that right?
They are my customers. Yes, I want to make money for Cisco. I want to make my stock even more valuable.
And they're the customers.
They are the customers who will ultimately pay. There's multiple customers in multimedia. If you look at the entertainment sale, there's the people who are producing it need channels to distribute it. Ultimately, it's the people who are watching it are going to pay.
Those are the customers that weren't that concerned about protecting the intellectual property content. They were willing to put out their own free content. Do you have products already in place that you can deliver to them?
The same products that will be able to deliver the entertainment-grade content, you'll be able to do that as well, for free if people choose to do it. And there's a certain cost of implementing the infrastructure.
But I mean, are you already at the trusted system level for the entertainment industry, or?
Not the trusted level, the quality level on there.
The quality level. So you could, a client, a customer who wanted to do free distribution, you are already in a position to demonstrate the efficacy of your product.
Yeah, we're in the office. We're moving MPEG-2 movies off DVD. And we do have some screens with a full 19:3 ratio, whatever the ATPD ratio is. It looks pretty good. The problem is that they're targeting fairly large bandwidth chunks, two chunk parts of the internet, and it's whether the intermediary carriers are going to get back and say, hey, pump a 6 megabit stream through when their users are pumping somebody's keystrokes. So it's a matter of actually people allowing their infrastructure to carry this kind of traffic.
And the actual product you're producing, the software about?
Yeah. I've been running this video on pretty much standard everyday PC.
So if you're running an iNet2 where the stream is not such a concern, you're ready to go there.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, we're working with people to add a new something.
Yes.
And is it a software suite that's a server and a client?
Oh, yeah. All pieces and content management.
I mean, you've got to have the client to be able to watch the movie using your system.
Yeah, I'll get into some of that later. I don't know if you want to go into the processing as much as multimedia. Anyway, as far as what's multimedia, as I said before, it's data that speaks to the senses. You can either show it to someone, or it can be an interactive kind of thing, like this conversation, or it could be a game, or it could be conferencing. And I'm only going to try to focus today on the one-way distribution. The collaborative, interactive ones are much, much harder because we have this little tiny problem called the speed of life. A lot of them like you to feel it, but it seems very difficult to get around. Okay, so things you're familiar with.
More about that.
Speed of life.
What's the problem?
Between here and the West Coast, for example, is rather many milliseconds of just light travel time. And the human eye and ear, especially the ear, are responsive to the round trip time. I don't think we've spoken to anybody over geosynchronous time. It's very hard carrying a conversation.
I thought that was the speed of electricity, not the speed of light.
I thought those were literally international landlines
of
electric current.
Actually, the speed of light we're talking about is the same.
I thought the problem was that the satellite is pretty far away relative.
Lower orbit, you get a lot of bounces. But still,
and that's why it's not such a bad problem.
That's why you can trust real circuits really. But there's still a long round trip. When you start throwing in relays, you miss what you do with packet switch, anything. It can end up 20, 30 milliseconds to the West Coast, and then response time for the human, and then back. And it starts to get uncomfortable fairly quickly. And especially if you're doing conferencing. If I got conferencing, I have you are sitting here in Boston, I'm in Los Angeles, and I'm doing this. And you say, stop. You know, when I hear you say stop, I'll progress to another letter. So we'll have a difference in where we in our human synchronization based on this. So conferencing is very hard to do, especially if you're using a distributed form and you want everyone to hear the same thing at the same time. Imagine an auction where the auctioneer is hearing the bidding coming in at a different sequence than somebody else.
Oh, this by 20 milliseconds.
Okay. The broker houses are looking at pricing. They want to make purchases in milliseconds.
They use the trusted house.
Yeah. And then somebody will tweak it. It's kind of trustable. Okay, so there's various means we know of multimedia. We've familiar products like NetShow and Real and Bubbles, even seen the stuff I do with the IPTV. And there's various ways to get to it. Click on the URLs, which is click from TV Guides, what have you. There's less familiar forms, which are collaborative things like Whiteboard or NetMeeting, and then there's multi-user games, some of which are quite expensive. The military is a huge network, real-time network in gaming. Okay, characteristics of multimedia. Voice. Voice has we can stretch those, we can shrink them, and that gives us a lot of flexibility for dealing with voice on the network. It may not seem like much to you, but it buys us a lot. Music, on the other hand, you can't fool with the rhythm of music. People really are very rhythmically sensitive. There's, in fact, no room for data manipulation at all. Music is much more difficult to convey than voice. Other characteristics are how many channels we're going to move. What's your dynamic range, frequency range? These are all sort of things that go into the root of what we mean by multimedia network. I'm sure you've all seen things like the postage stamp type video, the horrible sound you can't comprehend. That's one extreme. The other extreme is medical quality stuff with, you know, symphonic quality sounds. Again, same sort of things in video. We can move from the utterly horrible grainy to medical quality, black and white. We can do slow frame rate. We can do full motion video. And again, the size, the aspect ratio. When we get HDTV starting to be deployed, it will change our expectations of what we see. What's the state of the art today? Well, for a campus type network, corporate type networks, we can easily move DVD quality video and audio over standard IP networks and standard equipment, no problem. It's usually the system administrators who's the problem, not the network. At Cisco, we dump 5 megabit stream onto the net. And it's ruining gigabit networks. Dark fiber. We have gobs of bandwidth. And they said, 5 megabit, something must be wrong. Clamp it. What was the world?
Okay. Let's move into the technology itself.
Are you hiring anybody? Because we could get someone.
You have something you want to get rid of? We have a new campus out in the mud flat with LB, which no one wants to be there. The Cisco campus is now something on more than 3.5 miles long. Anyway, it's odd to be in a company that's growing that fast. When I started there a year ago, there were 12,000 people. Now there's 19,000. It's growing prodigiously fast. Okay, so a lot of mythology about multimedia networking. And some of this is going to be somewhat technical as I dig into it. So ask questions. Telephone-style people have traditionally wanted you to have connection-oriented virtual circuits. They've always wanted you to have circuits which are incredibly metronome from the source to the destination. Everything moves just by clockwork. Click, 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 down the network. That's the way telephone systems work. Well, it turns out that's really expensive to do. The phone companies have built massive infrastructure to do this. So there's a lot of people out there saying, you need these things. Well, you don't. There's a myth that the internet protocols, what with the internet, is just simply too unpredictable to move high-quality video. That's not true. There's a myth that network infrastructure is simply inadequate. Again, it's not true. I'm going to move great quality video over plenty of old networks. About local distribution circuits, there's an inversion going on in which the actual distribution between the edge of the network to someone's home or company is potentially much greater bandwidth than the backroom network. The backroom network is often built on two-year-old technology. Now we're starting to deploy DSL and cable TV-based networks and other forms of networks to people's homes. And we're only delivering them 2 to 6 megabits, which is possibly more than ISPs have back up to the rest of the world. So we're getting an inversion in terms of distribution. And not everybody's recognized that yet. Myth that traffic will not melt your network. That is not true. It could hurt your network, but it won't melt it. The truth about multimedia is a lot of people don't have a clue how to build it. There's a lot of products out there that play fast and loose with the rules. And they create problems on the network. And the internet is a commons. And people who play loose with the rules are taking advantage of the fact that there's no enforcement. It's for hurting everybody else. Not to mention names, there's one large company that puts out a video product that sends out these giant packets on the network, which get cut up into IP fragments, which there's not a speed, it's very old days with the fragmentation considered harmful. It slaughters routers, it causes congestion in the network, but they insist on shipping the product this way.
Why won't you say what company?
Because they're competitive ones.
What company is it?
Well, they're not in California, and they're in the Pacific Northwest.
So who enforces that?
No one. The net is wide open. Wildland, take advantage of what you can.
So why might they do it?
Why might they do it? They get higher performance factor. They can get higher performance on a local network. They haven't thought about the problem. They haven't thought about actually implementing the technology. So it's part of non-knowledge. It performs better in certain circumstances. And when they put people to deploy this product on a large-scale network, who gets blamed? Not them. The network provider gets blamed. It's the media that's going to get blamed. He's not comfortable.
So with enforcement, it's true,
say
the router
architecture
that was just stop those packets and...
I can imagine what would happen if I is... Cisco add-on said, we will block packets of this flavor. That would not play very well. Our flag with various routers and carrier techniques is, we carry anything, we carry one.
But you wouldn't carry a packet that was poorly formed.
Not poorly formed.
Certainly non-set compliant. Your problem is a loose spec.
It's IP fragmentation, which is highly detailed spec. But the fact is the processing overhead of IP fragments is considerably higher than normal IP fragments.
Right, with a step that lets someone do something that you really don't want them to be allowed to do.
Yeah, some very good specifications from 20 years ago.
Okay, not denying that.
Can I go to Cisco app and I'll look on this and that will be able
to... I can't speak to Cisco as a company here, but the notion is that I've got those products that carry everything. If I start being kind of discriminatory or well-caring, especially...
against competitors. It's interesting, because either it makes the spec that it doesn't make the spec clear, or it does make the spec, you could imagine a router that says, if I don't carry packets, it doesn't make the spec.
It's part of the variation on, we talked about the other day, email filtering is, who's doing the filtering for whom? And if you don't explicitly delegate to me or transfer to me the responsibility or agree with me that I should be doing this, that I shouldn't be doing this, this filtering, I shouldn't be blocking any traffic from you. It's a tough situation. I would love to block that kind of traffic.
Well, I don't understand that. You're criticizing your company for using packets that don't need specs.
So they use it as that. Yeah, it's just like SUVs. People, there's nothing illegal about SUVs. They just,
there was an RFC. It just says that these are discouraged, not that they are.
Yes, they're not respected. Yeah, they are suspect, they are discouraged, they cause problems, and when the problems occur, it's rarely the source software gets to blame the carrier, because the problems never occur at all.
It's your basic tragedy of the commons, isn't
yes.
it, that people overgrade.
And that's happening in a lot of areas.
Does your network management software flag these as such?
It could. I don't think it does. Mm. I mean, you actually have to know these things to look for, except the fragmentation.
It would actually be interesting if there were a Consumer Reports-like organization that rated net software, anything that produces packets along the dimensions of how common friendly it was, just like an eco-friendly wrapping on your hamburger.
Actually, my wife Tommy does that a little bit. She works in the network management area and does certification testing of SNMP, the network management protocol. And she will put a stamp on it and just conforms or just doesn't conform to it. Doesn't behave in a certain way, but she tends to do it under a non-disclosure. She's only disclosing to the people who are actually doing the testing and not to the public.
Right. These chemicals are toxic, so you may want to slow down the public.
Yeah, we don't want to get into a business of faming people. We're not faming them, but
well, the truth is saying it matter, but
it's hard to prove the truth. I mean, because we're you have to do a lot of testing to prove the truth, and then the RFCs are often ambiguous. So we don't want to get into that. I mean, the purpose for companies is to make money and not to get into fights over details. Okay, so what kind of networks and multimedia life want them to low off? Jitter is actually an important topic. Variation and delay to the network. If one packet takes 20 milliseconds, then one takes 40, then one takes 60. At the end, we actually have to put a buffer at the end to smooth it all out. So I can put a big bucket at the end, and the hose dribbles and spurts in, but we have a constant size hole at the bottom, which produces a smooth stream. We want the network not to reorder packets, we don't want much duplication, we want it to have not much delay. But we don't need perfection, even though the telephone people, company people tend to tell us you need a perfect network. Multimedia network targeting data is very time sensitive. You just don't have time to go back and get a replacement copy. The analogy is used in milk versus wine. Wine doesn't go bad necessarily with increased time, like Beaujolais or something like that. Milk goes bad before you get it. Versus milk, which goes bad really fast. Well, multimedia is much more like milk packets. It goes bad really fast. You got to deliver it very quickly.
Is the idea in possibly future versions of IP to allow packets to either self-identify or be identified by a third party as private companies?
Yes. In fact, it's been there since the beginning. There's a type of service field. And there's a whole bunch of new things called quality service networking, which is part of the presentation I completely removed, about how do you distinguish streams of various characteristics.
And would it be, this gets back to the common question, would it be self-labeling or some other way of labeling?
Right now it's self-labeling, which means anybody and everybody can ask for maximum priority. We need to add security and billing to all of this to make sure that people just don't give themselves ultimate priority.
You can only see what you have to get.
That's right. Or are willing to pay a lot of money. I mean, wearability is quite applicable as well. Network bandwidth tends to be very bursty. Now, a lot of metrics and equipment people buy is based on steady state. Like, this freeway will carry 5,000 cars an hour. Well, what happens if they all arrive at the same time? The freeway will collapse. Depends on the network here. Multimedia networking tends to be clumps of packets arriving at the same time. These freight trains, literally the water hammer effect of packets slamming into devices and causing them to go around. it's really hard to actually build devices with enough buffering and smarts to handle that sort of stuff. Transit-wise, I'm going to go fast here. Again, it's a real important thing. It causes all kinds of problems at this very time. You can't deal with a lot of options. Also, it renders conferencing impossible in certain situations. Jitter, again, like I said, is we have to deal with that to smooth the streams. And it's getting somewhat technical and moving fast. Lost packets have a major effect because we're talking about chunks of data in which tend to swap over from one packet to another. It's like you have the winning lottery ticket. Which is safer way to send it to somebody to cash it? Should you tear it in half, put it through the FedEx envelope, and send it on different airplanes? Well, if either of those airplanes crashes, you may get half a ticket, which is totally useless. So you're much better off keeping the ticket together and sending it once. The probability of loss is lower. Same thing in multimedia. You've got to bound the data so that the percentage of loss is relatively small. But even then, we're pretty sensitive to packet loss. As soon as we lose any percentage of packets at all, it's relatively insignificant. Voice becomes incomprehensible. Video starts to break up and becomes unwatchable. And this is where quality of service comes in. We want to pre-allocate the pathway to make things look better, which means we have to get people's pay and bill and what have you. Main killer in multimedia is congestion. It's just like a freeway. If the intersection, people congest. The other thing about multimedia networking, why it's obtained, is end user devices are completely inadequate. PCs are just garbage boxes when it comes to running multimedia. Their clocks are terrible, their internal buses are inadequate, the operating systems on them are inadequate. The number of pixels we're moving around is quite high. And we're just using brute force. I mean, Intel is buying their way out of this. Intel is getting faster and faster and faster processors. But, on the other hand, if you take a PC and then render it onto this nice computer screen you just pay the final money for, pump it out of an NTSC or video connector, put it in your TV set, it looks beautiful. And we have that at the office. And it's sort of on the screen, it's kind of jerky. This is what gets into the progressive versus interlaced scan debate. And you're shaking your head like you know all about it. There's very technical reasons why PC screens, even though they're better tubes than your TV, actually render a worse picture than the TV set does. But you can have a box, be it your PC or set-top box, which takes network-based video and pumps it into your existing TV, and it'll look better than it comes to your cable system. And in fact, using this kind of technology, your cable TV provider, you know how they're always telling you we're trying to squeeze more channels into the net? Well, that's because they're delivering every single channel to you. And what you're doing is you're selectively covering your ears and not taking up the data for the ones you don't want to watch. Well, that's awful silly. Why don't they just deliver to you programs you actually want to watch? Well, you can't. With IP packets and various technologies. That way, the cable companies, if they would adopt a change in technology, but you still use the same physical infrastructure.
Yeah. They could watch one show and take another.
You can watch it too, because the cable is so much bandwidth, you can move 20 huge DVD quality videos in less bandwidth than it's taking right now to deliver the 150 channels to you, or however many you're getting to. So that they could actually, the cable operators could get the best of both worlds. More channels to everybody and better quality. But they're tied into essentially old technology. We have an existing infrastructure, what's the word? You have old factories and things in place. We have that problem in the U.S. with respect to cable TV. It's hard for them to change. Moving the slide, lipstick is the toughest problem in multimedia. How do we get it so it doesn't look like a Japanese movie where somebody's overlaying and the voice is going different? Also, we use audio to face the video. I'm watching movies.
Sorry. Maybe I can come back.
Okay. Okay. I think this is the last of the live multimedia part. Again, solid engineering is often lacking. We've got a lot of people who tend to build things quickly and worry about the side effects later. The big question in multimedia is how bad is good enough? How bad am I willing to go? What am I willing to compromise? Because basically, I'm paying for bandwidth, and bandwidth is the ultimate thing in this multimedia. Another slide that we have graphics here. For small amounts of bandwidth, 200 kilobits doesn't sound like a small bandwidth to some people, but you can get talking head video.
when you were talking to Ted, the background was the same, and all was moving to Ted. Like Japanese Saturday morning video, also the eyes were looking out in the case. Versus that like 6 megabits, full motion, good quality, 30 frames per second type video. Stuff that actually is quite watchable. If you were going to compress your data, we're talking about huge amounts of bandwidth, like 220 megabits a second. That's bigger than anything you can handle. So we compress stuff. Video compresses wonderful, because if you look at video, nothing changes. Look at the scene behind me. My arms are moving, my head's moving, but the background's not moving, frame to frame. So we can compress it geographically in the still image. We can also compress it temporally from time A, time B, time C, time D.
Is that part of the reason that the order
is actually, no. If we, I'll give you MPEG in a little bit, and MPEG intentionally disorders back. But the thing is, I'm going to try and get to here is in compression, there's a third dimension where you can start compressing through. Text compresses in one dimension, pictures compress in two dimensions, and video compresses in the third dimension as well. A pixel is a blue sky. It's going to stay that same blue sky until the end of that scene. The options are represented with a small bit of data. And you can get to the point where I think...
Well, if you lose the first
picture
that tells you that
it's
a blue pixel,
then it's a blue mirror. And I'll get that in about 2 or 3 slides. And audio, again, no compression. And ignore this slide, because all I'm trying to do is say that we chunk video into pieces when we compress it. Okay, let's get to it. Here's the sequence. We start with pictures going along the time. Well, what we do is, you can see, it's a keyframe, a couple of delta frames, and keyframe, and then delta frames, and so on and so on. Keyframes are the picture. In and of itself, the deltas are differences. The deltas are usually small, and keyframes are usually big. We'd like to send all keyframes, except that that would chew up enormous bandwidth. The problem is, or we'd like to send a keyframe that is infinite number of deltas. Then the only problem you brought up is if you lose track, you never get to synchronize again. So we've got to mix the two. So MPEG, we have these iframes, which are keyframes. They're basically a complete image compressed, completely self-contained. They're depends on anything before or after them. Then we put in these intermediate frames, that are predicted back and forth. So MPEG actually has to look at frame 10, frame 1 and frame 10 before it can compute frame 7, which is a built-in delay. We're talking about, for conversational purposes, that's a third of a second in standard video.
Matter of code, does this actually get coded on a pixel by pixel basis so that you represent each pixel as like an array of red, green, blue, brightness, and then time duration?
No, actually, the time duration is there. It's frame by frame by frame by frame.
So you specify a frame as a whole bunch of pixels and then say, leave it there for X number of...
Essentially. There's a whole bunch of the things in here, and it's also done using what you see here called visual code. Visual cosine transforms. And there's also motion vectors, which actually try to isolate elements of the picture, like a hand. And figure out the hand, or something looks like one, and figure out its velocity across the picture, and send essentially a velocity vector for this patch of picture. There's all kinds of things going on. And a lot of the stuff is also in the newer codecs, like the Steve Sparrow or some laser style, fractal based codecs. The current technology is really fast. MPEG is hot now, fractal is coming on, MPEG is like very thin based, like off the injury, other than the one medium. And finally, in MPEG, there's also this other layer of stuff, yet a third tier of interleaving and frequency sort of thing. So MPEG is actually, transit system sort of goes like that. It's not enough. Which means the receiver has to sort of put the stuff back in order to deal with it. I'll add the delay so that it can be limited. Not to mention that encoding this stuff can take seconds or hours. I heard that from Star Wars trailer, it took them a week to encode it for that 2 minute trailer. Okay, how